From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, President Obama accepts the resignation of Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki following widespread patient backlogs and alleged cover-ups in the VA healthcare system.
Today I want every man and woman who served under our flag to know whether your tour has been over for decades or is just about to end. We will never stop working to do right by you and your families.
Also today, outrage in India after two teenage girls are gang raped and murdered. And in the wake of the GM recall, we speak to the mother whose daughter was killed when her vehicle's airbags failed to deploy.
You know, their son, their daughter, their husband died because of one of these defects. GM knew, GM hid it.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The leader of Thailand's military coup says there will not be elections in the country for at least a year. General Prayuth Chan-o-cha says the delay will let Thailand stabilize and adjust to political reforms. He also called for an immediate end to protests or resistance to the military. The gang rape and murder of two girls in India has sparked a wider debate about the systemic inaction of the police. The victims, aged 14 and 15, were found hanging from a mango tree in the Indian state of Uttar Pradesh. Eyewitnesses claim police were indifferent to the crime because the victims were from one of India's lower castes. Meenakshi Ganguly in India for Human Rights Watch says authorities were slow to act.
Initially, the villagers were very upset with the lack of police response. Even after the deaths were reported, it took the villagers to start protesting, and then for a lot of public outrage across India for the administration to take action. And now there have been some arrests of suspects, and the police officers have also been removed from service.
American President Barack Obama says he's accepted the resignation of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Eric Shinseki, after an investigation found mismanagement and misconduct at VA hospitals across the country. But lawmakers and advocates are questioning whether the ouster will solve the systemic problems in the massive veteran healthcare system, as Alice Olstein reports from Washington.
The president said he accepted Shinseki's resignation with considerable regret, but vowed to move forward in appointing a new leader, investigating the problems at veterans' hospitals nationwide, and holding those accountable who created secret waiting lists for patients.
I said we wouldn't tolerate misconduct, and we will not. I said that we have to do better, and we will.
Unlike Shinseki, the new interim leader of the agency is not himself a veteran and has spent most of his career in banking. He has only worked at the VA for 3 months, but will now take the helm as the nation awaits the final results of the investigation of the scandal, which is expected in August.
Crisis talks over Ukraine's unpaid gas bills to Russia have not ended in a deal, though Ukraine has agreed to an initial payment of over $780 million. The two sides have been meeting in Berlin with the European Union's Energy Commissioner, Günther Oettinger, who is pushing for Ukraine to meet a June 3rd deadline to pay Russia's Gazprom company over $3.5 billion in gas debts. In exchange, Moscow could agree to offer Ukraine cheaper gas after prices were raised last month following the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. The number of migrants reaching Europe has taken a sharp increase in recent months, according to the EU border agency Frontex. 42,000 migrants were found en routes crossing from North Africa to Italy between January and April of this year. Added to other migration channels, the number coming to Europe is thought to be around 60,000 in total. Hundreds have drowned making these journeys, as many make the trip in overcrowded and flimsy boats. Eva Moncor is a spokesperson for Frontex and says the problem is geographically broad and getting much worse.
Definitely the highest pressure is in Central Mediterranean. Migrants are arriving primarily from Libya to Italy. Departure country is Libya. However, migrants are coming from different parts of the world. The migrants who depart from Libya, many of them are Syrian, many of them are from the Horn of Africa, and others are from other African countries.
A man from the U.S. state of Massachusetts has been charged with obstructing the inquiry into the Boston Marathon bombings. Prosecutors allege that 23-year-old taxi driver Kairuluzon Matanov destroyed, altered, and falsified records in a federal investigation and made false statements. U.S. correspondent Lorna Shattuck reports.
Authorities in Boston say that in the days after the bombings at the marathon in April last year, Mr. Matanov realized the FBI would want to talk to him because he knew the suspects, Jokar and Tamerlan Tsarnaev. He's accused of deleting information from his computer and lying to investigators who say he shared the Tsarnaev brothers' philosophical justification for violence and spoke to them in the days after the bombings. But Mr. Matanov isn't charged with participating in the attacks themselves or knowing about them in advance. The explosions at the finish line of the Boston Marathon in April 2013 killed three people and injured over 260.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. President Obama has accepted the resignation of embattled Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki. Speaking at the White House Friday, Mr. Obama praised the retired Army general, but conceded Shinseki's continued presence would be a distraction as the probe into the VA scandal continued. VA health clinics have been accused of falsifying records to hide systemic problems over waiting times and scheduling practices across the US. The White House will now wait to announce a permanent replacement for Mr. Shinseki. Our Washington correspondent Alice Olstein has the story.
The president said he accepted Shinseki's resignation with considerable regret, but vowed to move forward in appointing a new leader and investigating and fixing the systemic problems at hundreds of hospitals serving millions of veterans across the United States.
I said we wouldn't tolerate misconduct, and we will not. I said that we have to do better, and we will. There are too many veterans receiving care right now who deserve all of our best efforts and an honest assessment if something is not working.
President Obama outlined steps that have already been taken to move toward accountability, including firing several officials at an Arizona hospital found to have created secret wait lists for patients in order to improve their own records, a move that led to some veterans waiting more than 100 days to see a doctor. Ian DePlack with the veterans group American Legion says it will take a lot more than just one personnel change to address this crisis. He says there are structures in place throughout the agency that need to change because they incentivize bad behavior.
You have a director in a hospital who, you know, is told that 50% of their bonus is, are you seeing patients within, you know, the 14 to 30 days? Well, of course, they're going to do everything they can to report back up. Yes, I'm seeing them within that. I would like to collect my bonus. I think VA became very focused on making the numbers match and not focused on what their mission is, which is taking care of the veteran.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are also calling for a holistic overhaul of the agency, with some Republicans openly advocating for privatizing veterans' health care. Republican House Speaker John Boehner said President Obama needs to show more leadership than simply accepting Shinseki's resignation.
Until the president outlines a vision and an effective plan for addressing the broad dysfunction at the VA, today's announcement really changes nothing. One personnel change cannot be used as an excuse to paper over a systemic problem. Our veterans deserve better. We'll hold the president accountable until he makes things right.
But the American Legion and other veterans groups emphasize that the problem did not begin under President Obama, though it has continued under his watch, exacerbated by years of overseas wars that have increased the VA's caseload by hundreds of thousands.
When Phoenix happened, it wasn't a new thing. I mean, this is something that we've been talking about on Capitol Hill for years and bringing it up, and yet we're still getting a lot of the same old responses from VA. There was a lot of the same over and over again, this is a problem, we'll deal with it. And this is 18 reports over the last 8 years.
But the problem dates back further than that. The Government Accountability Office reported publicly in 1999 that wait times for doctor's appointments were increasing for veterans. And in 2004 said some of the agency's data on wait times was missing or inaccurate. The Inspector General's final report on misconduct at the VA is expected in August. Alice Olstein, Washington.
This is FSN Reports. The gang rape and murder of two girls in India has triggered outrage over the police handling of the crime. The teenage victims were found hanging from a mango tree in the Indian state of Uttar Pradesh. Officers involved have been accused of neglecting to investigate the murders because the victims belong to one of India's so-called lower castes. Meenakshi Ganguly in India for Human Rights Watch spoke to me earlier.
These two teenagers went out last night to relieve themselves in the fields and did not come back home. The family then got worried and went to the police seeking assistance. The police refused to respond. The villagers then started looking for them, for the girls, and found them hanging from a tree. The autopsy later revealed that they had also been raped before they were strangled to death. Initially, the villagers were very upset with the lack of police response. Even after the deaths were reported, it took the villagers to start protesting, and then for a lot of public outrage across India for the administration to take action. And now there have been some arrests of suspects, and the police officers have also been removed from service.
But two of those suspects are in fact police officers, and that perhaps leads on to the outcry and the outrage, as you put it, over what's been described as police inaction and police indifference. Why was that the case?
By all accounts, what has happened in this situation was that it's also related to caste. The girls belong to the Dalit community, and the alleged perpetrators belong to the Yadav community, which is as to the police officers that have been punished. There was misbehavior alleged earlier by the communities against these perpetrators, and in fact the family members had exchanged words and had been attacked by these same people earlier. So this is something where there was an ongoing situation that the administration should have been addressing. There are laws in India that are supposed to protect the Dalit community, which should have been used. There are several laws that have been and policies that have been put into place since the 2012 attack and gang rape and murder of a young student in Delhi, and all those systems should have worked. And instead, what we find is that nothing really worked. The police did not respond as they should have. Earlier, when missing person complaints was filed, and even later when the crime was reported, it is the administration even now. The chief minister has sort of when questioned about this by a woman journalist, said defiantly that the woman journalist herself was safe. This doesn't show a good response and a responsible response from the state.
So that systemic change probably needs to cut. That message needs to come from the top. And Prime Minister Modi, the new Indian Prime Minister, seems to have been fairly conspicuous by his absence on this gang rape and murder of these two teenage girls.
Well, his minister for women and child care, Manika Gandhi, has said that she will demand stern action in this case. So we've heard from the central minister who's just taken charge of this issue. But it is not just from the top. It should not be a response, a knee-jerk response, when there's public outrage, as happened in December 2012 or now. This should be a systemic change, which requires hard work. It requires proper training, and it definitely requires an accountability mechanism that is effective, a grievance redressal mechanism that is effective, because unless that happens, officials will continue to not do their jobs properly. And if they don't do their jobs properly, then all these laws and policies that are created at the top level will just not translate into better protections and prevention of crime for the ordinary woman.
Meenakshi Ganguly in India for Human Rights Watch. Now, an ignition fault in vehicles made by the US car giant General Motors led to the deaths of at least 100 people. That's according to Laura Christian, the mother of a teenager who was killed in her Chevrolet vehicle and who is now a spokesperson and investigator for the families. GM has admitted having some knowledge of the problem for over a decade, but only issued a recall this February and has acknowledged that it led to 13 road deaths. From Harwood, Maryland, Daniel Wrenches reports.
Laura Christian gave up her first daughter for adoption as a baby, but always planned, together with the adoptive mother, for a reunion. That day came in July 2004.
She had the biggest heart. She had so much energy. She was so bubbly. And she was incredibly smart and also incredibly beautiful and very determined.
15-year-old Amber Marie Rose formed a close and loving relationship with her birth mother. But 1 year later, Amber was killed while driving her Chevrolet Cobalt.
We found out that the airbags did not deploy, and the paramedics that responded to Amber's accident told us that had the airbags deployed, that she would have been alive today. She would have been injured, but she would have been alive.
Christian investigated on her own and provided her conclusions to GM, assuming the company would adapt its vehicles to prevent a similar tragedy. But the scale of the problem only became apparent to her when GM issued a recall notice this February.
It's not just for Amber that I grieve anymore. It's for all of these families that have reached out, that I talk to, that are struggling to understand what happened to their loved one. And I have to tell them that, you know, if the car was in the accessory position, that there was no way that those airbags were ever going to go off.
Christian estimates she works some 10 hours a day, updating her GM Recall Survivors Facebook site, bringing together a growing network of grieving families seeking answers from GM, changes in the law, compensation, and criminal charges. GM's chief executive, Mary Barra, has acknowledged that 13 deaths can be directly attributed to the ignition switch problem that's behind the airbag failures. Laura Christian now believes that number to be much higher.
I have documented proof that that number is truly over 100 at this point, and it's still climbing. Very frequently, I get calls, emails, people on my Facebook page contact me because they're just discovering that, you know, their son, their daughter, their husband died because of one of these defects. GM knew, GM hid it.
GM has recalled 2.6 million vehicles since February and is carrying out an internal investigation, which, according to the New York Times, is focusing on how top executives attempted to contain public knowledge about the defects. GM has also retained the services of Kenneth Feinberg, who handled compensation issues related to 9/11, the BP oil spill, and the Boston Marathon bombing. Daniel Wrenches, Harwood, Maryland.
And finally tonight, FSN Spotlight, the segment of the show that looks at a story you might have missed. With today's edition, Simon Marks.
On FSN Spotlight today, a unique look at the tradition of bullfighting in Spain. Last week, for the first time in 35 years, the first bullfighting festival of the season was suspended in Madrid after three matadors were gored and trampled by the bulls. Not since 1979 has a bullfight been suspended in the Las Ventas Stadium in the Spanish capital. One matador, David Mora, underwent emergency surgery after a bull weighing half a ton gashed his thigh and punctured one of his armpits. Two others were injured in the attempt, eventually successful, to kill the bull named Deslio. The whole incident has raised fresh questions about the future of bullfighting in Spain, which animal rights activists have been campaigning for decades to halt. Alexander Fisk Harrison is not one of them. An author who has written extensively about the Spanish tradition of bullfighting, he told Clive Bull, yes, that really is his name, of Britain's LBC Radio, that last week's events were unprecedented.
Well, yes, I've never heard about it or read about it in all my researches for my book or in the bullfights that I've seen since I started going properly in about 2007. And certainly not in Madrid, which is the cathedral of bullfighting, as it's called. It's very rare indeed, because you have three matadors, and quite frequently you'll get one gored, but then the others will step in.
When we say gored, I mean, that sounds pretty nasty. Is it necessarily?
Well, the definition of it is, and it comes from the Spanish word cornada, means to be horned, literally, is the literal translation, the horns of the los cuernos. It means that the horn enters the body. And so in the case of the first one, one of his wounds had a depth of 30 centimeters, which is a foot. So the bull's horn entered a foot into his leg.
So to a layperson, you think, well, if that's what happened, then the bull's won.
Well, this is the great problem, is we have this word bullfight in English, which actually comes from our own previous habit of baiting bulls with dogs.
Right.
And is a mistranslation in Spanish. They have no such word. They call it the corrida de toros, and it's which refers to corrida, is to a bull running by. It's a performance art in which an animal, at the end of which is sacrificed, and hence always dies, but it's a man showing his courage and skill and grace in the face of a wild beast. The idea that it's sporting, there is a great risk involved, but that's not why you go and watch it.
What do you think does motivate the audience? Not necessarily the passing tourists, but the fans. They're looking for the artistry rather than the sense of danger, then.
It is to see the bravery and elegance with which a man can deal with an animal in that situation. It's a three-act drama. You start with the matador and an untouched bull, then the picadors on horseback with lances, then the banderilleros who place the barbed sticks, and then finally the matador with a much diminished bull at the end with the famous red cloth muleta, who then capes it in almost a dance and finishes it off with the sword.
And what made you decide to make a study of bullfighting then?
Well, I had been taken by my parents in when I was young and went to Spain in 2000, and I was very much naturally against. I was a member of the World Wildlife Fund, Greenpeace, studying biology as an undergraduate. My interest was in conservation, and expected to be horrified. And I saw one spectacular bullfight by a young, then novice matador, a noviero, who's now a famous matador called El Fandi. And having expected to be horrified, I was blown away by his courage, athleticism, artistry, everything, and thought, wow, what's this? But then I saw other bulls killed in a manner which I could only call butchery, and was horrified. And to me, what really struck me was it seemed to walk a moral borderline, that when it was done well, what you saw was something grandiose and spectacular and very foreign to my eyes. But when done badly, I was horrified by it. So I further investigated, wrote articles, and in the end was commissioned to write a book as part of the research for which, because I became friends with many of the matadors, I trained as a bullfighter myself.
How do you deal with the weight of opinion in this country, which is obviously one of worrying about the bull, about feeling this is just cruel and shouldn't happen?
Well, I used to be much more sensitive to that point of view, but increasingly as I go on and I take my trips to Spain and watch it and then come back and discuss it in articles and on the radio like this or on television, I find myself less sympathetic to the standard British knee-jerk reaction, because we kill 3 million cattle a year in this country. And we kill them at one-third the age of a fighting bull after a much inferior life, because they live wild on these huge forest estates paid for by the box office of the bull ring, unlike our poor Friesian Holsteins that wander around the countryside and rather, you know, they're corralled and then occasionally they get to see a bit of grass. And they're killed at 18 months rather than the 5 years these bulls were. And we're killing 3 million a year, which we don't need to eat. I mean, As the British Medical Association will tell you, vegetarians live longer. So those animals die for our entertainment, by which I mean the entertainment of our palates. We like the taste.
Mm.
And so you have to weigh those things up. Mm. And
but it's not a nice way to go, though, is it? I mean,
well, would you rather chew and smell? I mean, these animals are largely scent-driven. And smell the animals being killed in front of you as you queue in terror, aged 18 months, in an abattoir, Or would you go out adrenalized and fighting? Now, it's a fight you're never going to win, but they don't know that. And so they have the adrenaline of combat. And they're of an age where they've been fighting each other on the ranch for years. And so they're in combat mode, and they go through that for 20 minutes, and then it's over. Or you could queue for hours to a bolt gun that may or may not hit the right place. I mean, it's a hard judgment call between the two.
And you say it's a fight they're never going to win. Mm. That's another criticism that people make, is that it's not a fair fight in that respect. I mean, is it true that the bulls are kind of held back in some ways?
Well, it's not gladiatorialism. I mean, it's not a man and a sword against a bull. It could be, but there would be no art and it would have died out. The bull is diminished, and this is how the Spanish phrase it, by the picador with a lance, so that the man can then bring the bull closer and closer. Of course, as we've seen from this example, he still gets caught. He can still be torn apart. And even a few years ago, at least one of these matadors would have died from those wounds. Hence, there is a statue to Alexander Fleming outside that very bullring, the inventor of penicillin or discoverer of penicillin, with a matador bowing in front of him as part of the statue, because they used to die in very large numbers. 533 professional bullfighters have died in the past 300 years.
And what about the welfare of the bulls is the thing that a lot of people care about. Is there a respect for the animal? Is there anything done to consider their well-being when you can?
I mean, you are injuring and killing an animal, as you are in an abattoir, although the injury and the killing tend to go together in an abattoir. The vet at the Old Madrid Bullring always used to say, a well-fought bull feels no pain. Now, I never quite believe that, but it is true. If you read all reports from combat doctors, that when someone is shot in combat, they don't feel pain because they're so focused on what they're doing, so adrenalized. And that's what the state the bull should be in. However, you're injuring and killing an animal. I've seen animals react with what you would call in biology pain behavior. But there's no way to kill an animal the ultimate suffering is death. So we're wiping out 3 million a year, and 40,000 in Spain die in bull rings. They think about it. Respect for the bull is very much a credo amongst matadors, respeto al toro. But undeniably, injuries and deaths occur. That's the purpose of the spectacle.
Animal rights activists would obviously disagree fundamentally with Alexander Fisk Harrison. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals claims that bulls in Spain are beaten before the fight. Some have their horns removed to keep them off balance, or have petroleum jelly rubbed into their eyes to dull their vision. In some fights, the dying bull is conscious but paralysed as he's dragged out of the arena. For the case against bullfighting, you can visit Peter's website, www.peta.org. For more from Alexander Fisk Harrison, you can turn to his book, Into the Arena, The World of the Spanish Bullfight. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. Coming up on Monday, the growing relationship between Russia and China and what that union means for the United States. That's Monday, but for now I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone, with feature story news everywhere. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.